And from the KTOO newsroom, I'm Anna Canny. Civil liberties advocates are accusing the Alaska Department of Corrections of unconstitutionally limiting prisoners' access to attorneys at the state's only all-female prison. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska made the allegations in a letter to the department last month. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
ACLU of Alaska Prison Project Director Megan Edge says her group hears from hundreds of inmates every month, but not uniformly.
We always thought it was odd. We weren't hearing from many women.
So Edge says the group did some digging.
And then through a variety of different investigations, what we started hearing from women was that they did not feel comfortable writing the ACLU of Alaska because of Department of Corrections mail policies. Department of Corrections is scanning and reading every legal document that's going through it.
Department of Corrections policy prohibits mailroom staff from reading or searching legal mail marked privileged, including correspondence with the ACLU. But Edge says staff at Highland Mountain Correctional Center in Eagle River aren't treating inmates' letters to and from the ACLU as privileged communication. The ACLU raised the issue to the Department of Corrections last month in a letter detailing a variety of other issues that the group says violate prisoners' constitutional rights. In one case the ACLU calls alarming, Edge says Highland Mountain staff failed to delete confidential files from an inmate's criminal case from a shared computer, and that allowed other prisoners and correctional officers to see them.
These are details that are sometimes the most private details of somebody's life. It's a dangerous situation for a variety of reasons, and that's why discovery is supposed to remain confidential until it is allowed to be introduced as evidence in a court proceeding.
Asked for a response to the ACLU's allegations, Department of Corrections spokesperson Betsy Hawley said she had shared the letter with DOC Commissioner Jen Winkleman and the superintendent for Highland Mountain. She says, quote, matters requiring attention were addressed, but did not respond to subsequent questions asking what was addressed and how. Edge says it's possible correctional officers aren't familiar with prisoners' rights to communicate with their attorneys. She says simply educating staff could go a long way, but failing that, she says the group will take, quote, the appropriate next step to fix it. She declined to say whether the group would sue. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And now for this week's Curious Juneau. KTOO's Yvonne Crumrie brings us this week's episode about the history of Auk-Rek, where some canoes will land tomorrow for celebration.
Every other June, canoes, or yak, arrive at a beach in Juneau. With carved formline paddles in hand, Southeast Alaska Native people row for days to get there. They come for celebration, the gathering of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian people, honoring the survival of traditional dance, art, language, and community. Sikuni Fran Houston is a spokesperson for the Auk Kwan. She spoke at the landing in 2022.
It's the first one I saw that occurred. It brought tears to my eyes to witness this. And it also kind of gives you a little vision as to what our ancestors did.
Yaks have been landing at this beach for much longer than the 40 years since the first celebration. It's the site of an old Tlingit village called Anchgatsu. That means the town that moved. A KTOO listener asked about the Auk Kwan village, fish camp, and gardens that used to exist in the place that most Junoites now call Auk-Rek. For this Curious Juneau, an Auk Kwan elder shares the history. Auk-Rek is a park along a beach north of Juneau, with shelters made of stone and fire pits. On clear days, the beach is dotted with couples on walks, dogs sniffing around, and families having picnics. Oral tradition says parts of the beach were cleared of boulders and large rocks to make it easier to launch and land yak. By the time Sikuni Fran Houston was growing up, Auk people weren't living at the village site, but she knows the story of how they first got there.
When we migrated, that was the first area that we... So in other words, we're the first indigenous people of the area.
The oral history has it that the Auk people migrated from the south and deeper in the interior. For hundreds of years, Auk people lived at Anchgatsu, Auk-Rek's original name. But in the 1930s, the U.S. Forest Service took over the land after a legal battle with the Auk people. The Forest Service has maintained it as a recreation site ever since. But Tlingit people still use the land for practices like ocean dips and canoe landings, and they say they hope to do more to maintain their connection there. Houston says that around the turn of the 20th century, people had started moving away from the village to Douglas and downtown Juneau to work as miners, and so their children could attend school. But she says the land at Anchgatsu was always in use.
There was a time, too, that there were some people stated that we abandoned Okrek. We didn't. We still use it. Not only do we use it, we do take what we need in the area. We use it for ceremonies, but we didn't abandon it.
In the 1920s, the Forest Service claimed the land wasn't occupied. They began to make campsites, trails, and other infrastructure in the area. In 1931, the Forest Service claimed full ownership. Juneau researcher Peter Metcalf wrote A Dangerous Idea, The Alaska Native Brotherhood and the Struggle for Indigenous Rights. He says settlers claiming land was abandoned was a common land grab tactic.
That has been used in a legal sense against Native Americans from the beginning of contact in the lower 48 as well as Alaska. And most Native Americans would say we never abandoned our land. And it's true, in a moral sense. Just like if we own something and, we haven't sold it, we still own it. Doesn't matter if we live there or not.
The same year the Forest Service took control, over a dozen Occoquan built cabins on the old village site to stake claim to the land. It didn't work. In January 1932, a federal judge ruled that Tlingit people had given up ownership by not occupying the land. He gave the families a month to remove their cabins. The Forest Service expanded their construction at the site, and by the 1940s, it looked much like it does today. Metcalf says the way the federal government claimed Ok Bay wouldn't hold up today, especially after the passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act in 1971. Sitting on the beach on a sunny March day, Sanjean Jennifer Quinto gets ready to lead a traditional ocean dip. After setting an intention and reflecting around a fire, Quinto guides participants into the water a little bit at a time. Quinto says to her, Anchgatsu is a direct connection to her identity as Alaska Native.
The way that this was likely also a place of joy for a lot of people, but then also the heartache of the fact that we're not allowed to be connected in that way any longer to this place.
She says the word recreation in Ok Recreation Area can cause people to treat the beach like it's a playground. Quinto says she's often picking up trash from the sites of old longhouses. And she says that if people could only see what it looked like when it was a lived-in village, they might treat it differently.
And you would have seen the house fronts, you would have seen our kutia, you would have seen our people out here, and now there's no trace except for those footprints.
She says that erasure was the start of a long history of reducing the footprints of Tlingit people in Juneau, including the gradual shrinking of Juneau Indian Village downtown in the middle of the last century and the burning of the Douglas Indian Village in 1962. But events like traditional dips in the ocean or the canoe landings at Celebration bring Tlingit traditions back to the land and back to life, Quinto says.
When we're able to gather here for cultural events, those are moments that we get to restore that life to this area. And I don't think it happens often enough.
Sakuni Fran Houston says that when she stands on the beach now, it fills her with gratitude for her ancestors.
And I go out there and I talk to my ancestors and I thank them every time I go out there and say thank you for choosing this area because it's so pretty and so peaceful.
Next week, paddlers will once again ask the Occoquan permission to come ashore in recognition for the history and life of this piece of land. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
To check out more Curious Juneau stories or to submit your own question, go to ktoo.org/curious. And now for a quick correction, a story that aired on Friday previewed this year's celebration events. It misstated the location of one of the canoe landings. The One People Canoe Society will be landing in downtown Juneau across from the Ramada Hotel at 11:30 a.m. If you get a chance to see them, it's a great way to kick off your celebration festivities. And coming up tonight at 7 p.m. in the University of Alaska Southeast's Egan Lecture Hall, there will be a panel of experts discussing what they're doing to forecast glacial outburst floods this upcoming summer. They'll bring together representatives from the City and Borough of Juneau, from the University, and from the National Weather Service. If you're unable to attend in person, there will be a live stream available, and you can find it on the National Weather Service's website. That's all for the KTOO Newsroom, and you can check out more stories at ktoo.org.